Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Defended Childhood. This week, we watched The Fugitive. And again, this is thanks to you guys. We had over 6,700 people vote, or at least 6,700 votes cast in our Action Hero poll, and Harrison Ford won, which, frankly, I was surprised. I was planning one of the classics, 80s slash early 90s action heroes, but he was right there all along. So before you ask, no, we're not going to do a Star Wars movie. That is for another day, perhaps, but I think it's important that, honestly, after doing Indiana Jones, it's that you look into Harrison Ford's wider oeuvre. I don't know how many of our listeners know him outside, but in the 90s, he was a bit of an action star. Now, we've already done Air Force One way back in the back catalog, so enjoy The Fugitive. It's not up yet, but in a couple weeks' time, we will have a poll on our Twitter about what you want for our December month. And it doesn't have to be holiday-themed. We're thinking doing kind of a kids' movies, family movies. But still, look forward for that, and thanks for participating in all you do. As you know, we have left ESO, which is fine for us, and we wish them the best. Keep listening to all the great ESO shows you listen to. But Here Be Tigers, us and Geekly Oddcast are trying to put something together as far as Patreon goes. And, frankly, my busyness is not helping with anything. But, if you can, you should subscribe to Geekly Oddcast, you should subscribe to There Be Tigers, and, or, Here Be Tigers, and do all the other things. Follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Myopia Podcast, everywhere. Follow me on Letterboxd. If you're on Letterboxd, look for me there. We have, you know, thousands of reviews up. And, you know what? Thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an outlandish kind of escapee. He's at every Blockbuster, Hollywood Video, every flop house. We have The Fugitive on Myopia Defend Your Childhood. I'm Nick Hoffman, the host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood, and we're checking every outhouse for every shithole movie. And on panel with me, we've got
Matthew W. Quinn, who is very impressed right now.
Are you a tobacco auctioneer all of a sudden?
Hello, this is Daniel, and I was framed. I parked legally in that spot, damn it.
After 6,700 votes for the best action star, and thank you for all of our Twitter fans and Facebook fans. Guys, I am truly impressed.
I was trying to tilt the vote for Michael Dudikoff, but...
you know what? Master Dudikoff, if you want to teach me how to spin kick, you're always welcome at the old Hoffman house.
Did the man himself actually vote in the Twitter poll?
He did, and ironically, he voted for Danny Trejo, if I recall correctly. And he's like, wait, this is counting? Shit, I meant to vote for myself.
I was wondering if his humility, he thought Danny Trejo was better.
Oh. You know what?
You know what? After that, I've heard they're both really nice in person, but after that, I kind of have a soft spot for Dudikoff.
And subsequently, Sudsy's elevated him to the next round. I pick Sly, who didn't make it.
Mm.
You know what? After so many votes, frankly, if you had asked me a month ago, I would have assumed we would have been doing an Arnie month on a Schwarzenegger movie.
Mm.
But you know what? It came down to Jackie Chan and Harrison Ford. And by the skin of his teeth, by the scar on his chin, Harrison Ford won.
The scar on his chinny chin chin?
And this chinny chin chin, my goodness. We knocked out 59 other action heroes, and he won. And frankly, a movie that we wanted to do months ago, The Fugitive, and didn't come around, is our start. And I think the three of us were completely entangled by it. I think Matt thought it was a little slow at times, but overall, I think we liked it. Sudsy, why don't you give us a plot synopsis?
Well, I'm not sure if there's anybody out there who hasn't at least seen parts of this movie when it was on cable in the 90s. So Harrison Ford is Dr. Richard Kimball, who's accused of murdering his wife. He's sentenced to death row, but he manages to escape and he is trying to clear his name as a U.S. Marshal. Gerard, who is Tommy Lee Jones, is trying to hunt him down and capture him. It's actually a real simple plot, and you know what? That's why it works so well.
Yeah. I will also say, as Daniel and I got into midway through this movie, it's the plot of actually one of the better Leslie Nielsen later films. Wrongfully Accused.
I had that on VHS back in the day.
So, Daniel, you've seen them all. I have too, because you and I are effectively the same person in different colored t-shirts.
I do enjoy that.
So,
Chewbacca.
Are you Huey and Dewey? Then where's Louie?
Unfortunately, that means you're Louie. At the moment, another brunette of average to tall height who has an opinion of bad movies. So, we got Spy Hard. We've got Dracula Dead and Loving It. We've got a Wrongfully Accused.
And then I know he was in Scary Movie 3.
As the President of the United States.
I know he was Canadian, but you know what? Better option.
Right.
Better option.
Right. Where does this rank?
Who are we talking about this
Leslie
point?
Leslie Nielsen?
Leslie Nielsen, Wrongfully Accused. Where's Wrongfully Accused, please?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of funny how we're going on that tangent.
Well, I can't comment intelligently because I saw that movie when I was probably in middle school.
I give the edge to Spy Hard, if only because of the Weird Al song.
I don't remember Spy Hard, really.
Spy Hard, you've got to spy hard. This movie is so good, we can talk about whatever we want.
Yeah. Is that a Stay Tuned?
No, I can't do a comedy with Weird Al and Leslie Nielsen. Can you?
I mean, I can. Whether or not it'd make for a good episode is another question.
It's not an episode. Comedies that make it are ones so bad they shouldn't exist, like Dude, Where's My Car?
Mr. Magoo.
That episode is gone.
That's twisting the knife
that's
there.
That's gone to time. We'll record it if you guys pay us on Patreon.
Heck, I'll just come over to your house with a coffee cup. You put a nickel in it. We'll do it.
Put a dimer there, and then he'll dance for you, too.
Like Handsome Pete on the dock. That's what I do.
Play Turkey in the Straw. See Daniel dance. Anyway, so Richard Kimball is in what might be the longest opening credit sequence of all time.
Oh my God, yes.
For 20 minutes, he's found guilty?
Yeah, he starts out with the killing of his wife, and by the end of it, the credit sequence are on the bus is going to get in an accident, and they're all going to escape.
Mm-hmm.
In 15 to 20 minutes long. They took their sweet time with their credits.
By the way, there's no reason for this movie to be as good as it is. It's directed by the same guy that directed Under Siege.
Which, previous episode, yes. Under Siege. Which is a fine movie.
Do you think Steven Seagal auditioned to be Dr. Kimball?
You know what? I would be in that, but do I really have to run at all? Because, you know, I don't do running. Or I could punch him. Could I shoot him, but with my fist?
Well, knowing Steven Seagal, he'd have turned Richard Kimball into a First Nationer who was an expert on holistic medicine, and holistic medicine gives him superpowers. So that's how Steven Seagal's The Fugitive would have gone.
You know what? If I could run all the way to my friend Vladimir Putin, I would be able to get away from all of this crime.
Mm. You see, he and Gerard are sitting there smoking weed and like communing.
Yeah, basically.
Instead of one of them chasing the other.
God damn it, why am I smoking this weed with this hippie?
And then, of course,
because you need to get in touch with your soulful side, and then you'll know that I didn't kill my wife.
I'd stand up to convince you, but I'm too tired.
And then, of course, Steven Seagal sobers up and drives a tank through somebody's house for a reality TV show where he's pretending to be a cop.
What would really center me right now is going back with you to my fuck dungeon.
Taking Tom Lee Jones to his dungeon? Wow, he's really diversified his tastes.
Yeah. Your giant ears and all of your wrinkles make me really interested.
Let's be honest here. In that relationship, Tommy Lee Jones is the Dom.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to take you back to your fuck house, and I'm going to teach you a lesson about your fuck house.
Take it every dog house, outhouse, and fuck house in the 3-county area.
Yes. Oh my God, Tommy Lee Jones in this movie is great.
Tommy Lee Jones in Von Trier's Nymphomaniac.
How's that for images, stick fork? How's that for images, stick forks into your eyeballs, too?
Oh, my God.
Oh, good Lord.
Or Antichrist?
Oh, my goodness.
Which disturbing European sex film would we discuss next?
Antichrist isn't a sex film. At least I hope you don't consider
it a
sex
film. Oh, no,
it's
a torture porn film. One way or another, porn is in the title of a Von Trier movie.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Maybe not Dogville.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you Dogville. Anyway, what do we got here? We've got a
you know, a respected surgeon. I mean, it's a redemption story, right? It's a man who's respectable, who's fallen from grace because of the, it's the one-armed man.
Yeah.
And the Chicago cops are clearly trying to railroad him from the beginning.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's trying to close a case, right? It's the thing you always hear about true crime because, you know, we're white people. We listen to true crime podcasts. It's all about a good cop just trying to close 1,000 cases at once. They find the cop in shock and the plot hole, which we don't get to, which is why is his skin under her fingernails? Which is never explained.
Well, he said that she had grabbed at him when he was trying to resuscitate her or something.
Yeah.
Which we don't ever see.
We do see him try to do CPR on her at one point. We don't see the grabby.
Well, the whole way, it's kind of confused how that scene works, which actually is okay, although it plays out very law and ordery these days, where there's like brief flashes and glimpses of the initial fight. Yeah. Glimpses of the initial fight, and it's done in like they reverse the negative, so it's a black and white photography that's been reversed.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be very confusing and disorienting because that's how Kimball recalls what happened.
Well, and further, when I was in college, and I assume all of us had this roommate. I don't know how your undergraduate careers went.
Mm.
But eventually I moved off campus and I had this one roommate of mine I knew from fencing club. They were obsessed with CSI. They watched, and I was like, every episode of CSI is bullshit. Why are you watching this? It like, because the thing was, like, DNA evidence is not fully admissible. And so when someone goes, ha-ha, and they confess, what actually gets them off, of course, is the confession. That's
right.
The answer. But that's how these shows always work, right? And something this movie does very well is that there's always gray area. Constantly. There's no answer. And the three of us had a good old film discussion as to whether he got off at the end, because that's what a good movie does. It makes you think about it after the movie's over. Like, that's fantastic. And honestly, our justice system has its issues, and that's why our debate was interesting. But what we never got to is a satisfying ending. Like, at the end, Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford are hugging or whatever.
Well, they're getting into the back of the car, and, I mean, Kimball's still handcuffed, so...
We'll get there, but, like, ultimately, what makes this story interesting is that Harrison Ford has to figure out who killed his wife, which is the worst thing on the world.
Well, that's something that just doesn't make any sense to me in retrospect, because, spoiler alert for a movie that came out in 1993, the whole thing is that Dr. Kimball had found out that an experimental drug was actually causing liver failure in patients, and so the pharmaceutical company used their security head to go murder Kimball, and he accidentally killed the wife, so they basically pinned that murder on Kimball. But there's been a lot of pharmaceutical scandals, especially in the last couple of years with the opiate crisis, and I don't know. I don't recall the Sackler family ever hiring a hitman to kill a doctor.
Well, maybe because they're smart enough not to do it.
Or because it's not necessary for them to do it.
Capitalism. I mean, although...
It would just draw on more attention to it.
Although, if you Google pharmaceutical company murders, the first thing that comes up is 2018... on Bloomberg News, so it's a real news site. The unsolved murder of an unusual billionaire.
McAfee?
Epstein? Is it Epstein or Epstein?
Now the Floridian pervert doesn't roll off the tongue very well.
Yeah, that's true.
Someone having sex with kids still could be in the Catholic... No, I'm kidding.
you can say that.
I can. It's true. As a Catholic myself, I believe in, you know, the rotting of hell. The thing about it is, this kind of stuff happens all the time, because, you know, as Matt said, the money, you know, the bigger thing means the money.
Oh, there's a ton of drugs out on the marketplace that probably shouldn't be, or that the side effects...
Oh, you mean like fentanyl,
no, yeah.
Like, you know, the kids dying because of smoking pods. By the way, you know, now that it's out, my brother, quote-unquote... worked for K&S, which is a big law firm downtown King Spalding. And 15 years ago, we knew that vaping killed people.
Mm.
Like, they knew that. But, you know, they were big Republican fundraisers, so it was hidden. But it causes a condition called throat rot, where your esophageal tissue dissolves. So don't use E6, please.
But of course, if they're Republican donors, what really is science?
Yeah. I mean, the metric system? What? Anyway, so after a while, it turns out that Richard Kimball can shave his beard. I do want to go back for a second. The greatest train accident in film history.
Oh, yeah. So the way he escapes is he's being transported on a bus with other prisoners, and one of the prisoners tries to stage a breakout by shiving one of the guards, and things build from there, and basically the bus goes over a hill and gets hit by a train.
Someone saw Silence of the Lambs. Oh, see how it bleeds.
Yeah, it involves a shotgun, and someone missed a bunch of times. Because they shoot the guy with a shiv, and then I think he shoots a bunch of other people, and then then someone shoots a tire, and it's a little confusing.
Or are you talking about that other guard? He was the guy in Office Space who invented the jump to conclusions.
Yes. Matt. The guy with the jump to conclusions, Matt, is willing to let everyone die. He's like, fuck that guy, I'm getting out of the car.
No, he's the guy that had a shotgun on a very, very, very enclosed space.
Yeah,
what did he think was going to happen?
He killed the guy with the shiv.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
He killed the bus driver. Not fine.
Mm.
And then when...
accidentally, he dropped the gun and then...
No, they were wrestling over the gun.
Right.
Right. But then, when everyone else was wounded by the rollover, he bails on people who are still alive when Kimball's trying to save them and then blames Kimball for the murders. Kimball is blamed for 4 murders in here.
Well, at first the guard tries to tell Tommy Lee Jones that, oh yeah, he was killed in the crash.
Well, and at the end, Tommy Lee Jones acknowledges that Kimball didn't kill his wife and that this doctor had set up a huge conspiracy. The problem, of course, with conspiracies is that to figure them out takes years,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, unless your rent-a-cop shoots a Chicago PD officer on a train for no reason.
Well, but that's the problem. There's no cameras there on the train. As you pointed out earlier in the movie, there's no witnesses.
And the witnesses who are there, some of them say Kimball did it.
Right. Kimball's accused. And that's the problem with Kimball at the end of the movie, is that... he's blamed for the deaths of at least 4 people in the escape. And so he'll probably get off eventually, but it's not like a finger snap thing.
Yeah. Chances are what'll happen is the pharmaceutical company's plan will get exposed, and then Kimball's role in that will get exposed, and the governor will end up pardoning him for the crimes that he actually did commit in the course of the movie, like faking IDs, or like breaking and entering, or like threatening a U.S. Marshal with a gun.
Unfortunately, because in most of the states, including Georgia and Illinois... judges are elected and not appointed.
Ugh.
They're not actually truly neutral because they have to be reelected every 4 years. And so the idea that you'd get someone who pulled a gun on a cop and potentially shot 4 other police officers is being let go is not the kind of thing that's electorally popular. That Harrison Ford is probably dead.
The Chicago cops are pretty obviously trying to kill him because
but Chicago cops are very popular in 1993.
Are
turns out that we don't realize that they hate black people until 2012. I mean, that's also true. I only taught government for 12 years. The problem is with government is that you learn to hate the government, then you start drinking. No one will buy you more alcohol than a government teacher, except for possibly an elementary school teacher.
This is why Nick's favorite cocktail is the Kaczynski.
Did you know that recycling is fake?
Well, according to NPR, it kind of is.
How did you bring down a Ted Kaczynski joke? That's pretty strong.
Because
you outdid the Unabomber. Theodore Ted Kaczynski.
Well, let me know if you start building a shack in the woods somewhere so you can do an intervention before you start blowing up postal workers.
Uh-huh. But I shaved my beard. The only one writing manuscripts around here is...
Yeah, what was up with that line, though? After he escapes, he runs. He ends up in a local hospital somewhere, which he's a doctor, so he knows the hospitals.
Ground,
right.
Yeah.
Switched, fine. He was injured. He has to stitch himself up. He has to get a few painkillers. And then he goes and shaves off his beard, which, again, that makes sense. A cop confronts him with his own description. He's like, oh, I see that guy every day when I look in the mirror, except for the beard. Why not just say, no, I have no idea who that is?
Look up the almighty TV tropes, Refuge and Audacity.
Okay, yeah.
The cop would not expect him to do something. The actual fugitive to identify himself.
Yeah, but he did, and then eventually he reported him in the next scene.
It was the security guard from the train who they brought it.
No. He said in the next scene, he goes, "Someone called in from this hospital," and
it was the injured guy from the bus they brought in after he got shit.
Yeah, I think Matt's actually right there.
How How dare you defend him?
Yeah, no. Because he's like, wait a minute, and he's like, and he just shoves the gas on him.
Well, right. I mean, the only reason I disagree with you there, Matt, is because I hate teenagers.
We've established that over about 4 years of podcasting.
Mm. Well, to be fair, this website is founded a decade and a half after this movie. This is 1993. The internet was exclusively AOL keywords and GIFs of, well, not even GIFs, audio files of South Park lined up with Bill Clinton quotes.
Yeah. Don't forget Usenet prawn.
Oh, boy.
Were you on Usenet?
No, CompuServe.
Oh, oof. I was on Easy News by 2004. That's all I got.
Yeah, my folks had CompuServe, and then we eventually migrated to Netscape. I don't remember if there's anything in between or not.
You know who's still on AOL, by the way? Mike Pence. He sent something like 200 emails from his AOL account for the last few months. Which is, of course, illegal under federal law. He's going down like a clown.
Mother, I'm in some trouble, Mother.
Yeah, right. So I bring this up. Students of mine asked me to keep track of the impeachment hearing, so I've been following this shit real close. And after almost 40 pages now, it's not looking good. But don't worry. Mike Pence is also guilty.
It was the one-armed man. The one-armed man is the guy who tried to make the deal with the Ukrainian government.
He only had one arm, so how could I keep track of all of that?
He only had one arm, and it was the most tremendous arm ever. The best arm.
You could see how fast he ate those double cheeseburgers. You know, he was faster. So after the train scene, we have one scene to talk about, which is the waterfall. I mean, the dam.
Oh, yeah. The one thing that even like 5 years later was still getting referenced, because as popular as this movie was, it got forgotten very quickly.
Yeah. Sudsy and I were talking about this. Cry movies. There's a lot of them. I mean, and I would say, what, French Connection, mm-hmm. Bullet.
Probably Dirty Harry.
Dirty Harry. They are top bill. I love them. I do love those movies, but this and L.A. Confidential need to be in the same breath.
Yeah.
This movie is a masterpiece.
And L.A. Confidential is a lot closer, but I think people forgot about it because it was based on a TV show, and that's not that's just a bad reputation that those adaptations have.
Frankly, you, both of them. What are the best TV adaptations? This is up there.
X-Files is good.
Mm. No, as a movie.
That's what I'm saying. I remember liking
the
X-Files.
Oh, the first X-Files, that one's good. I'd say MASH.
The Adam. Well,
but that's the other way around.
Yeah, that's the other way around.
The first Addams Family movie is good.
Mm-hmm.
But this, tragically, causes a whole melange, a whole barf bag of terrible yes. movies.
There were like two Brady Bunch movies in the 90s.
Well, but there's a divergence. Addams Family led to the comedy ones, including some Flintstones movies, which are definitely Stay Tunes.
Oh, God.
The Brady Bunch movies, which are Stay Tunes. The live-action Scooby-Doo, which are Stay Tunes and a half.
Oh, please, no. Oh, yes. Oh, please,
oh,
no.
Oh, yes.
And the problem is, the first one is almost a movie. And
no,
then
it's not.
It's not a movie, right?
It is not almost a movie.
But, I mean, like, this one, on the other hand, the dramatic action side, leads to movies like SWAT, which is 100% not a movie. Mm. The Baywatch movie, which is not a movie.
Baywatch movie? Were there more than one?
The one that came out with The Rock and
Zac Efron.
Because that was so recent, though. Yeah. The Fugitive was in 93.
Well, yeah, because The Fugitive is based on a TV show from the 60s.
Yeah.
And SWAT, which came out in the early 2000s, was a movie from from the 70s?
Yeah, it was.
80s?
It was 70s.
And what was the, was there a Miami Vice movie too?
Yeah, there was a Miami Vice movie with Brad Pitt, I think.
No, it was a Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx.
Wrong yes. blonde guy.
Yes. And it was terrible.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, the problem with this movie is it's good. See it. Right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you have Tommy Lee Jones, who won an Academy Award for this. Harrison Ford, who's still waiting to build his own Academy Award out of, like,
lumber.
How is there not a movie with Nick Offerman as the son of Harrison Ford? Just being wildernessmen, right? Like, they're just hands-on carpenter types. It's the Jesus story. One plays Joseph, one plays Jesus. They're performing miracles, maybe in the woods, and maybe they start a militia, and maybe they overthrow the U.S. government. I don't know. I'm just pitching.
And once again, we're back at the Kaczynski cocktail.
You know, recycling's fake.
Well, here's an idea I had when I was watching this here, that Gerard, the U.S. Marshal, reminds me a lot of Javert from Les Miserables, you know, someone who is dedicated to the ideal of justice and is so utterly all-consuming, obsessed with doing it, the point where he starts getting ideas that Dr. Kimball is innocent, he starts reinvestigating the whole case himself. Like, you see him in Kimball's house, and he's interrogating all the witnesses. It's like he decides he's going to get to the bottom of this whole matter, never mind that his pay grade is basically chasing down a federal fugitive.
I can see that to a certain degree, especially at the beginning, especially during the waterfall confrontation that Nick was discussing earlier, which, if you've not seen it, that's the whole "I didn't kill my wife, I don't care" bit. And then,
I don't care.
And then Harrison Ford jumps off the dam in order to escape from Tommy Lee Jones. I can see that Javert comparison up to a point, but Javert's whole thing, I thought, was once somebody's labeled a criminal, they're always a criminal. They're always the scum of society. And it was
that
when...
makes him the villain eventually.
Well, that, right. And technically, Valjean is a parole violator.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes,
and
he
redeemed himself.
If you believe in your own theory at the end, it doesn't work, because Javert believes that he's always guilty.
Exactly. And then when he finds out that he's capable of good deeds, that's when Javert doesn't go back into the case. He just jumps into a river and dies.
Right. Like, if you believed in the Les Mis version, if that was the movie, "I don't care" is literally the last line.
Yeah.
Right. Because he needs to die, because if he's ever guilty, he's perpetually guilty, because it's a Catholic metaphor. Sin is sin no matter what sin is. You kill one person, even if it's in your... to find your own innocence, it doesn't matter. It's still sin. We're all damned.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, that's what it is. Les Mis is a proto... It's the musical version of Friday the 13th, which is something eventually I need to see.
The musical...
Those teens are fucking...
There has got to be a musical version of Friday the 13th somewhere. There is a stage version of Evil Dead.
The Friday the Song Teenth.
Oh, no. Oh.
We should produce one, the world's first slasher play.
I feel like I already have the songs stuck in my head, even though they don't exist, and it's annoying.
Voorhees, I'm just a member of the Voorhees family. Yeah, no.
The hills are alive with the sound of slaughter.
The sound of what now?
Oh, slaughter. No. How dare you, sir? He just started... That's the overture to the Hills Have Eyes musical.
The hills are alive with the sound of cannibalistic mutants.
By the slaughter
way,
rolls off the
of
tongue
these,
better.
We need a character. The Greek chorus is Mulder and Scully. You know, Mulder, it seems like something evil's afoot. Evil!
Or getting back to the fugitive, conspiracy. Because it's not just some hobo who broke into the house and killed her. It's actually this whole thing involving drugs.
You know what? You're absolutely right. And the thing is, the narrator is always filmed in silhouette, and you see the puff of smoke, like it's the cigarette-smoking man, right?
Yeah.
Richard Kimball was found guilty. The problem is, you know, the cigarette-smoking man is a little bit more fine. Richard Kimball was found a little bit guilty. The problem is, evidence didn't quite line up, but they wanted to find someone to put away. Right, like, and that's how it goes. And then from there, you enter the...
You sound like William Shatner.
Hey, you know what? That'd be a perfect narrator for that.
Kimball was guilty. So guilty, in fact, that he was put away. How about that? Is that better, Matt?
Captain, sir, what if he is, in fact, not guilty, and this is just part of a conspiracy to frame him?
Now, you yellow son of a bitch.
Oh, God.
I don't want anyone gay on my holiday. But I'll indulge you for a second. The problem is, Bones, get on the case. We want someone to make sure that the forensics is tight. Put that bastard away.
And scene,
yeah. Ultimately, the problem with this movie is it's too good. So
it was a little slow moving, but that'd be realistically what a fugitive case is like, because the running and the shooting doesn't happen until someone's getting caught.
Now, I've got a question. What do you mean by slow moving exactly? Like, what scenes slowed the plot for you?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of... I mean, they all kind of work together. They all fit. It's just they're not exciting.
What makes them not exciting? I'm not trying to be contrarian here. I'm just interested, really, in what scenes in particular you have in mind.
I mean, and it's not that... I mean, the problem is, Sudsy and I were punching each other in the shoulder. We were intrigued, and you were bored at times. For us, this is a good procedural drama.
Yeah.
this flows. I mean, to me, what's interesting about this compared to other cop dramas, Bullitt is one-on-one. You know, Die Hard, hell, even Dirty Harry is one-on-one. These are men on a mission, right? In some ways, this feels more like The French Connection or Chinatown, where they're against odds, they're fighting uphill. But Tommy Lee Jones has an army behind him against Richard Kimball.
Including Joey Pants, who we've not mentioned yet.
Joey Pants holding on to hair. And I love Joey Pants. Joey Pants shows up in some of the greatest movies of all time. You know, he's the one who wants the stake in The Matrix because, you know, real life shit. But, you know, the stake is real. And you know what? I agree with Joey Pants. Joey Pants is a hero for me. And in this movie, he looks like Charlie Day. So he's also a hero to me. But the thing is, these people, men and women, they have a good, diverse cast even.
Mm-hmm.
They want to catch Kimball because Kimball is fucking guilty.
Going back to what you said, though, when we were talking about the procedures and just how all the casts interacted together, Matt, do you really just have a moment in mind where it dragged for you?
Not that I can think of. It's just it wasn't very, a lot of times it's just very, again, procedural, which realistically, that's what it is. You hunting for fugitives is not near misses and shootouts every 5 minutes.
Well,
it's not like when they arrested Eric Robert Rudolph, they're chasing him through the mountains for like 24 continuous hours in a gunfight, and they found him in an alleyway somewhere after 5 years of the trail going cold.
Right, right. That makes sense.
So, you know, this is not an action movie.
No, I get what you mean, Matt, when you're talking about procedurals being boring, but I still think they had a nice twist to this. Nick mentioned the cast, and there are moments when they're not just going over the rules and what they have to do. They're like interacting with each other. That scene where Tommy Lee Jones and his team are analyzing that phone call from the payphone that Kimball made to his lawyer and going like, never doubt the big dog, and then they're all like saying, oh.
That part was fine. That was pretty clever. Or when he's in the hospital, Richard, he just reacts. That way he knows it's him. That's pretty clever.
Right. It's moments like those, though. So I can see how that would drag down, but what specifically about this was slow? Because the characters, they all just seem to have a great chemistry with each other, and that, even in those slow moments, made it entertaining.
Well, I never said it was bad. I just said it wasn't all exciting all the time.
All right. After that train crash, it's hard to get more exciting than that.
For me, this movie flows pretty clearly, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, what's interesting to me is everyone claims it's the other person. And ironically, this came out almost concurrent with the O.J. Simpson murder, where he claims there's another man, to the point where...
Was the Bronco chase the same year this came out? 93?
It must have been close.
Did O.J. ever come up with an alternative explanation to who might have killed him if it wasn't him?
Of course he didn't.
Of course not. He even wrote a book called How I Would Have Done It If I Did It.
Because I heard some people were claiming it was drug dealers, but did he ever say that?
That's what racist would say. He murdered
racist trying to exonerate a guy saying it was someone else who did it?
No, because O.J. Simpson was one of the good ones.
There's never been any credible evidence that anyone's put forward regarding an alternative killer to his ex-wife and her friend.
Rob Goldman? Goldman.
Yeah.
Don't worry, Kato Kaelin has an old sitcom in his back pocket for someone to sell.
Well, I just know part of the whole reason behind it was because this whole thing happened a year after Rodney King and the L.A. riots. So a lot of people were very skeptical about the LAPD.
Yeah, well, and the chief investigator was a huge racist.
Oh, yeah.
But it turns out O.J. Simpson is still a sociopath. And
he still went to prison for another crime that he was guilty of.
Definitely did.
Yeah.
All this to say, Harrison Ford, not O.J. Simpson, turns out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a response to that.
Well, that's kind of interesting, though, because it would have been interesting to see how they made this movie at the height of the O.J. trial, where every single person in the country was an amateur lawyer, right, or like an amateur detective.
O.J. Simpson, in many ways, is the beginning of the true crime.
Yeah, basically.
Everything. You know, My Favorite Murder and all that.
Well, because they had cameras in the courtroom recording everything that happened.
Well, and what's the little girl, the adorable girl who was killed? JonBenet Ramsey?
Yeah.
Okay. Her Atlanta home was very close to where I grew up.
Ooh.
Yeah, King's Cove. I knew someone who was her neighbor, in fact. A buddy of mine named Alex.
Wow.
Now, did this buddy of yours like to put on Santa suits and sneak into basements?
No, he was very young. And the murder happened at the Colorado house anyway.
Right, right.
But Alex, who I'll tell Matt later who he knows, told me a lot about this when we were in elementary school and friends together. But, I mean, true crime is a seductive mistress, especially when white people die.
Yeah.
I mean, to be blunt. And this is around that whole time, right? Like, this movie is a perfect little nugget, like a little nugget of joy.
You're right, but now that I think about it, maybe that's why it didn't really stay in the popular imagination, because a year later, this same story was basically happening for real to a certain degree.
Right. I mean, the problem with the zeitgeist is the sexier stories elsewhere, right? Like, mm-hmm. This is around Silence of the Lambs, too.
Yeah, 2 years after.
Right, and the problem is, this is a PG-13 movie, which may be a masterpiece, but PG-13 doesn't have the viscera, doesn't have the gore, doesn't have the lasting effect.
Well, this movie I don't think really needs to be ultra-violent or ultra-gory.
I'm not saying it does, but I'm saying what lasts does, right? Silence of the Lambs, Seven a few years later, like, those are hard.
Well, you don't necessarily have, like, when the original Wolfman, you don't see blood on the cane. You just see the cane going up and down,
I don't disagree, but that was 60 years before this.
I'm saying you don't necessarily need blood if you're creative enough.
60 years ago, man!
I think what Nick's saying is that the true crime stories that everybody's obsessed with really do rely on the gorier the better, which is why Jeffrey Dahmer's still talked about today.
Well, and good old Jeff Dahms and his, you know, crock pot full of penises.
Oh, good Lord.
Was the same time period, yeah, man.
It was.
And the PG-13, The Fugitive, based on an 80s TV show, no, sorry,
60s.
60s, is not the same caliber. And don't get me wrong, this movie is a masterpiece, and it should be alongside those other movies. But you forget it because real life at the time was much more terrifying.
Yeah.
We had had Ed Gein. We had had Jeffrey Dahmer. We had had John Wayne Gacy.
Didn't Bundy, like, wasn't that trial just like 4 or 5 years
Bundy,
before
Bundy, I
thought
this? It was in the 70s, or in the 60s, 70s, maybe early 80s.
When he went on trial.
Early 80s. But even still, that's a sexy story. Bundy is a handsome man. Like, the problem with this movie is not that it's bad. It's an excellent movie, and Tommy Lee deserves the Academy Award. Frankly, I think Harrison Ford should have been nominated because he is crestfallen. The poor man is broken. Kimball tries so hard.
Now, what do you think about that moment? And I'm not sure if this reveals anything about the characters, but there was another survivor of that bus crash. I forget who that character's name was.
It doesn't matter. The black guy on the back of the bus.
I didn't want to say that, but yes, that guy. He escapes too, and then that's dealt with like maybe 20 minutes later in a scene where he's just gunned down by the police.
Well, they're gunned down by Tommy Lee Jones. It shows it's a character moment for him that he's ruthless and very clever, the way he kind of gets around the guy who has one of his own guys hostage, and the whole I don't bargain line.
Oh, right. I misunderstood. Yeah, Copeland.
Yes, Copeland.
It's also a loose end, you know, where'd he go?
Well, yeah, it's a loose end.
No,
but
it's an interesting scene because Copeland could have also exonerated Kimball, right? Because like, the whole thing is the fat jail guard, right, guy claimed credit for, he didn't know what had happened, and he claimed to save his second in command, even though he wanted him dead. Yeah. One guy who could have justified Kimball was Copeland, who was shot dead.
Well, the whole thing.
Well, there's also the other guard who got stabbed. They found him under the train.
The problem is, when he enters the hospital, he leaves Movie Town forever. We never see him again.
Even though that's a pretty big thing about Kimball's motives, he saves a prison guard, even though he's a convicted murderer.
Yeah, and the guy never comes back.
Right.
But of course, the problem is, to what Matt was alluding to earlier, if he comes back, the cops have no case, right? And so, of course, he needs to remain comatose or die, but we don't know. I'm okay with it. Like, I hate it because in real life there'd be a plot, but the fact of the matter is, to keep this movie as tight and action-packed as it is, you need to do it, right? I mean, I'm sorry, you just have to. That's what good editing does. Maybe there's a whole musical number off to the side where the guy enters the, like, you know, Broadway and whatever.
Well, plus, I mean, the whole thing is they go move the action back to Chicago and the crash happens well outside the city.
Yeah. I mean, everyone rips that scene off, though. Isn't it great?
Yeah. Well, apparently that set's still around somewhere. I forget where, but they never cleaned up the crash. So if you are hiking in the woods, you could probably just see the old dead train line, and then you'll see all the prop train cars from that they use for this movie.
Yeah.
And somewhere in the Midwest.
I'm sure the almighty Wikipedia has some discussion about where it was filmed.
Well, speaking of almighty Wikipedia, we're almost out of time.
I didn't realize almighty Wikipedia was the keyword.
You'll never know what happens. You have 100 million people all have an obsessive level of knowledge about one thing. What happens if you put them together?
Oof.
Well, I mean, that's what our podcast is.
Yeah.
Matt, you want to give us your final judgment?
Okay, it's not necessarily the most exciting movie in the world, but it's very well made, and it's very clever. So yeah, I would recommend this one. Not just see it once, but just see it. And if procedural crime stuff is your bag, go for it. It's well made.
Sudsy?
I'm surprised it took us this long to get to this movie, and I'm surprised that people don't still reference this or talk about it today, because it's really good. It's a really good cop movie. It's a really good kind of a noir movie to a certain degree. I mean, I disagree with Matt. I didn't really think any specific part dragged or was boring. I understand how he came to that conclusion, but for what it is, it's one of those movies that has no right to be as good as it actually is. I mean, it's a TV adaptation of an old show from the 60s that I don't think many people would have remembered at the time. And still, they're like, you know what? We have this material. We're going to make the best possible movie we can. And they did.
I agree with, frankly, Sudsy very closely. This movie is a masterpiece. I don't know. We talked about doing it before. It turned out we did it now. Who cares? This movie is awesome. I think I saw it in seventh grade or something crazy like that for the first time. And I liked it then. I didn't remember as much as I did. I thought this was so good. The fact that Matt and I, you know, argued about this movie for 20 minutes after we watched it shows how good it is, because we weren't arguing about the quality. We argued about the procedure, which meant we thought about it. How many movies have we actually thought about like that? This movie is not only well shot, it's well directed, it's well acted. Tommy Lee Jones won an Academy Award for it. Mm-hmm. The problem is we don't get to debate movies that get Academy Awards very often for reasons, because when I was a kid, I didn't think, wow, I'm surprised this won the Academy Award. Oh, jeez. I can't wait to talk about Schindler's List when I'm an adult. Oh, boy. Oh,
Rick, let's watch Schindler's List. No, Marty.
No, we that's one that I think is pretty much off limits for this.
American History X, because that would mean I'd have to watch it again. The Big Lebowski, because I have fun when I watch it. The regular Blues Brothers movies, because it's a good movie. Like,
you know what? Better Chicago movie. That I will say that Blues Brothers is a better Chicago movie.
Now, are you telling me you heard the L train in your video? Yeah, whatever. Ultimately, this movie's a masterpiece. You need to see it. That's it. You just have to watch it. It's good. It's like 130 minutes. It's not even that long. That's it. You're done. You have to see it. Next week, we're of course going to do another we're going to do another Harrison Ford movie. I will say, though, December is still up in the air. Check our Twitter feed. Think the 6,700 votes, at least, who voted between Facebook and Twitter to get us to this point. Next week, of course, we will announce on Twitter, and if you're on the Patreon, you'll see it in advance. But otherwise, of course, December is up in the air. We will give you some hints soon on Twitter as each of us come up with a theme.
I think we've decided we don't want to do straight Christmas for December.
We could do
year.
Eight Crazy Nights, the only Hanukkah movie I'm aware exists.
You need to come up with another movie, though.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Oh, that's an interesting conundrum right there. What pairs with Adam Sandler's Eight Crazy Nights?
Billy Madison?
Ooh.
That's not a family or holiday movie.
Yeah, but you have to find a theme then, Matt. What's your
Hanukkah
theme?
Movies? Is there, other than Eight Crazy Nights, I'm pretty sure there's not any.
I don't know. Did this, I almost said Squidbillies. What's the fucking thing with the cucumber?
Veggie Tales?
Yeah, is there a Veggie Tales Hanukkah are they too Christian for that?
That's a mashup I wish existed. VeggieTales meets Squidbillies.
Yeah, we already did the Rugrats, so you can't say Rugrats Hanukkah.
Wait, I'm imagining a VeggieTale version of the Hanukkah story where, I don't know, Larry the Cucumber sacrifices a pig in the temple.
Wait, you actually know the name of that cucumber?
You sure?
Yeah, and Bob the Tomato.
Oh, good.
Bob the Tomato then wages a guerrilla war against the evil idolater Larry, who desecrates a temple with a statue of himself.
That's so much better than anything I could have come up with.
And there's killing aplenty. Oh, this could be fun.
So which one is the, in the New Testament, which one would be the moneylender outside the temple and which one would be Jesus? Because I'm picturing the tomato as the moneylender.
I'm not really sure.
Okay.
Maybe because they had one that was based on Daniel when he's supposed to worship the statue, and it's not Larry or Bob who's the evil Persian king. It's some completely other different vegetable.
Oh, good
Matt
lord.
Matt knows exactly two vegetables.
Yes.
So stay tuned next week and every future week as we go to a salad bar and teach Matt other vegetables, I guess.
This butternut squash, it represents John the Baptist.
As we look at another Harrison Ford movie in 2 weeks. Thanks, guys.
Why Would You Defend Your Childhood is a product of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced by Nick Hoffman, Daniel Suttis, and Matthew Quinn, and edited by Daniel Suttis. Our theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons license by Attribution 3.0 license.